Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It is the Anfield Wrap after Liverpool 1, Manchester City 4. Joining me, I've got Dan Austin, I've got Kev Walsh, and I've got John Gibbons to talk about that result, that game, and the way in which it all played out. We're not going to fuck about, to be quite honest with you. We might as well just do it and get it out the way first, Kev. The keeper, it is as if Leo Messi missed that Ronnie Rosenthal chance twice in 5 minutes. It is absolutely spectacular. Like, I think at some point we're going to have to all find the room to laugh about it. I sort of hope he's 3 days away from being able to laugh about it, because you've got to be able to put this sort of shit behind you. It is astonishingly, staggeringly bad from, if not the best in the world, one of the two or three best in the world.
Yeah, he's shit the bed, hasn't he? He's absolutely shit the bed, and he's then shit the bed again. And then for the third, the fourth, fucking hell, you lose count, don't you? But he's not great again. But the thing is, as a goalie, as Klopp said after the match last night, he's pulled us through so many times where we've, like, that we won the European Cup because of the save he makes in the Napoli game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's humongous. When what's happened for the second goal happens, you've got to then, I know they say he's a professional, so he should be able to deal with it, but they shouldn't be passing the ball back to him. They should be doing anything it takes to just have 5 minutes where you go, listen, we're not going to make any mistakes now, we're going to get rid of it. And for the third goal, Wijnaldum's pass back to him is absolutely abysmal. It's terrible. It's sort of stunned right into his feet. It should be put across him so he can launch it up the pitch, but it isn't. And because he's flat-footed, probably because he's still thinking about the first mistake he's made, he then cocks up and causes another goal. But listen, obviously we've seen a lot of goalkeepers at Liverpool where we've got to the point where there's no return for them because we're fed up of them. It happened with Mignolet, it happened with Karius, it happened with Adrian. It's happened a lot of times. It's not going to happen with Alisson. It's just it's a one-off. These things happen sometimes. And the problem is, if a goalkeeper has an off day like that, it's goals that are conceded. Whereas if a striker misses 10 chances in a row, just go, oh, well, it's one of them things.
When I did the Leo Messi, Ronnie Rosenthal thing, Kev, that's a really valid point in that when Ronnie Rosenthal misses, it doesn't equal minus one.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is effectively, you know, it just means that we don't go plus one. And that's how huge those errors are, aren't they? Because Liverpool are 1-1, and I don't think we're very good at 1-1, I hasten to add, and we can come on to talk about that. But Liverpool are 1-1 in the game, and he does what he does. And the really weird thing about it is each of the second and third goal, he doesn't just make one mistake, he makes four. I think you can probably argue over the course of the piece, and that's what drives you mad as well, watching it, and it becomes minus two.
But the thing is, sometimes, like, since yesterday I thought was out of nightmare defensively, thought he'd done okay going forward, I thought he was bad defensively. But what I looked at, and when you're looking at the goals, like, he was skipped past a couple of times, but he had no help at all. You want someone to go and help them. It's harder to help a goalkeeper, but one way you can help them is not to just ping the ball right at his feet when he's just made an absolute
Are you all right with the one where Fabinho's going back? So Fabinho sweeps it up, he comes across, because I think that's a fine pass for Fabinho to play, because he's thinking the keeper's just going to fucking send this. It then becomes a mishmash after that point, but I understand why Fabinho goes back there, because the keeper can kick it further out.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. The goalie cocked it up there. The one I've got the issue with is the Wijnaldum pass back to him, because Wijnaldum should have made the decision for him. If he puts the ball across him, he's basically saying to him, just slam that up the pitch. But he doesn't. He puts it right into his feet like he's passing to Thiago in the middle of the pitch. But he wasn't. He was nearly in the six-yard box himself, Wijnaldum. And he passed it back to his goalkeeper, who was already facing to the corner flag. So he's putting him under tremendous pressure. So he can't slam it because of the way the ball's delivered to him. So you're thinking, just get rid of that. But he was trying to get rid of it. But because it's such a bad pass and because his footwork is so poor, probably because he's still thinking of the error that he's just made, then it compounds everything. And that's what I'm saying about help him out. Don't give him the decision to make. Put it across him and give him a ball that says, listen, lad, just slam that. Let's get us out of here for a minute and see where we are.
The first one, John, you can make an argument for Foden's smart. He's quick to it, but it's still absolutely dreadful, the execution. He isn't great for the fourth either, to be quite honest with you. It's it's rare that you get to see, as I say, not just one mistake. You get to see one mistake from any footballer, but to see that many from a player at that level in those circumstances in such a short space of time is remarkably rare.
It sort of amazes me, really, how he continued to back himself despite each mistake. And don't get me wrong, it's generally a good thing. You know, next week, you can imagine him putting it out of his mind straight away. It's not something that's going to live with him, so I don't worry about him as such. But I mean, yesterday I just felt like he could have done with bothering him a bit. In that, you know, I mean, look, I'm with Kev. I get a bit of a cob on, really, with defenders or midfielders in this case who don't just clear it. It's almost like they go to the keeper to do the job for them. Like, the, I don't know, like they're bothered about the pass completion stats or something. I just think, well, just you do it. But in this case, it's such a mad pass to try and do the last one when you've done sort of, it's four bad passes in two goals, really. And if you look at it, gets confusing here because there is so many mistakes. But the second bad pass for the second goal, or the first one that sort of he'd made up, it is a pass, and you think you've just got away with one there. You've just played the little sideways pass that was sloppy, and you've got away with it. And then why go for the big boomer to Robinson, I think it is, he's on the left hand side. And then the second mistake, or the second goal that's from him, or the third goal is, you know, it's this little clip pass, isn't it, to the side, where, you know, you just think at that point, you know, with the errors, just boom it. So it is crazy. It is worth pointing out, I would say, that he has been ill this week, and, you know, he was obviously fit enough to play. But, you know, when you've been ill, you can be a bit drained and a bit more lethargic. And, you know, that's not to say, you know, excuse as such, but it is worth bearing in mind, I think, you know, in terms of, you know, it might just affected him in terms of his strength or just his mental kind of, you know, presence, really. I don't know. But look, we'll be fine and he'll be fine. It's just annoying because, you know, we had got back into the game and, you know, they were probably playing a little bit better at that point, but it did feel at that point like a game that either team could win.
The idea of either team being able to win it looking likely, Dan, is one of the reasons why it is a killer. I think John's right to say, I think City looked the better side at 1-1. I don't think they always look the better side at 0-0. And I think obviously then the way the game plays out, it allows them to come off the pitch at Anfield with a 4-1 win. I mean, they're the savage reality. That's the savage reality of the situation. You can't chalk the goals off. You can't say they don't count because the keeper had a mare. The goals still get to count. Yeah. But they... Why it is the timing of it on top of everything else, you know, it would almost be easier to take if we were 1-0 down at the time rather than having got the penalty to get back into it and make it 1-1. It is that context as well, the context of where the league position is, the context of the knock-on of the table. It is almost hard to scale the size of these errors. And as I say, we've got to all be able to brush them off, including him, as John says, including the team, including the manager. Everyone's got to be able to brush them off. We've got to be able to brush them off, but simultaneously, it's worth saying the fucking big things to brush off.
Absolutely. I thought it was remarkable that I've never quite seen a footballer make six mistakes, I think, in total of that level in such a short amount of time, and look entirely unflustered throughout the whole process. Like, usually you would think, oh, the player's panicked or, you know, got in their own head about it, but he looked so relaxed, far too relaxed, rather than panicking about the whole thing. It was like he was not there, just completely detached from the situation, which was the particularly strange thing. The timing of it, yeah, kills the game, but also the main hope for the season for Liverpool as well. I think that I was certain that Manchester City would win the game anyway, to be honest. I thought that Liverpool were playing all right in patches, but I thought it was quite clear throughout the whole thing that they had another gear to go through. And we're just the better team. To be totally honest, or at least we're capable of hitting a height in that match that Liverpool weren't. So even when it went 1-1, obviously was very happy that it went 1-1, but even without the mistakes, I just always had the sense that they would score at least one more, possibly a couple. I'm trying to maybe clutch at something here, but I think maybe the circumstances help in that case. Like, if City were just always going to win the game anyway, then something bizarre happening is maybe easier to write off and, like we've said, basically laugh at in a few days' time for the players. I think I'm at that stage already. I'm sure that they won't be, but hopefully by the time they're coming to play Leicester, they can. You know, I think they reacted really well to getting tonked 7-2 at Villa. in a way that would have been harder for them to do it had they lost 4-2. And it was just a really bad performance and didn't end up being crackers. Whereas I'm trying to say that I think maybe losing to City in mad circumstances like this is better than if it had just gone 3-1 and they'd been brilliant, if you know what I mean. And Liverpool come off just feeling, oh, they were streets ahead of us there. If we can all sort of not blame the goalkeeper, but if they can think, well, you know what, a couple of mad errors there that are completely out of character of what's done for us, then maybe it's better for their mental recovery from the game if it can sort of be written off as that. So maybe in a few weeks' time, we'll be able to come back from it and go, well, it was better that we lost in them circumstances than in others, because I think we've all seen that, you know, the goalkeeper has made errors before, not on that scale in that way or in that kind of match, but he's incredibly mentally resilient, and I wouldn't expect him to have anything in his head when we go and play Leicester next week. So if he can get over it and they can get over it, then maybe it's better for something crackers to have happened for 5 minutes than for the alternative, because I think that as all right as Liverpool had done in patches, I think they were always going to lose that game, to be honest.
The Dan's point there, Kev, around City in general, an extra gear, I felt that I see his sort of general point. I think one of the things about City, and I think it's the thing that's defined them when I've seen them in the last however many weeks, it isn't so much the extra gear, it's that there's a level of security. And the way they're quite happy to wait for you to fuck it up a little bit. And we do so, obviously, as we have now covered, in fine style. But they just look to me like, you know, they've got that the centre-half too. And everyone's raving over the centre-half. I think it's quietly quite interesting that he gets one one-on-one with Salah and absolutely shits the bed, frankly. He goes totally one one-on-one with Salah. But what they've got in front is that really weird, strong line of four, which has got Bernardo Silva in it, João Cancelo in it, Rodri in it, and Zinchenko in it. And there's this almost four that sit really deep on top of there too. And it seemed to me as though they just had a real level of security, both in terms of when they had the ball and when they didn't have the ball. And that's what I was really impressed with. You know, in the end, Sky give Foden man of the match, and I don't half think that was for his youthful Mancunian nature rather than the actual reality. I thought any of those four I've just named who protected that back line brilliantly were excellent, and Gundogan gets a brace and he does a bit of both.
Yeah, the thing, all that was going through my head when you were talking about them, Nerdo, was all you're talking about and the reason that they're so good is exactly why we're playing so poorly in comparison to where we were, because the players that do that for us are now playing at centre-half instead of playing in that position. And they're playing, so they therefore step back, and the players that are stepping in there, they can't do that role. You can't ask Thiago to do that. You can ask him to sit as a deep-lying midfielder in certain games, but don't ask him to run the legs off him, because he can't do it. That's not his game. He needs runners around him to do that. So, listen, I thought City were boss. They were just they looked like a proper football team, probably exactly how we would have looked had it not been for the injuries that we've got. It's not like we're a million miles away when you go first team to first team against them. They just played. They played football. I said on the team talk that I thought City's best option would be to just sit deep and wait for Liverpool. And that's, as you just said, that's effectively what they did. But then once they smelled blood, they're good enough that they just come and they overpowered us. So that the four that sit in front for them protect the back two. So you back. That's why I was saying Liverpool should have played a back two, that in back two centre-halves that were centre-halves and protected them. Because if you're already going to be struggling in that position, what City have done is just said, okay, we're not struggling, but we'll be solid there and we'll be good in midfield. And then all you've got to do is give your forward lads a chance. And the likelihood is they'll take them chances. And that's what City did. Listen, it was a performance of champions, really, because they played the game precisely how it needed to be played. Now, they let us sneak back in at 1-1. I know you don't necessarily think... I didn't think we were ever going to get back into it. I know you don't necessarily agree with that thing of it, but... At 1-0 down, I thought.
My thing, Kev, on Dan's point and my sort of point was, I expected when we went 1-0, I thought these will have loads of control here. And they did for about 3 minutes, and then they just sort of went a bit like suddenly they realised. Because I think it's interesting how the keeper, for instance, comes up to celebrate the 4-1. Like they knew yesterday that a win probably wins them the league, if we're honest. Not just because of us, but because of the gap it now is to United and all that sort of stuff after United drop points. And I think at 1-0, the heads go a bit, because I'd have expected them to hold the ball, look after us, and we kept nearly getting in little bits and pieces. And I think that's what I mean more than anything else. Then when it goes 1-1, I think they're absolutely brilliant at 1-1 City. I think they're absolutely tremendous.
I think the point at 1-0 late, you're expecting to have total control. You're sort of forgetting that Liverpool are still, as shit as we've been recently, are still a very good team. So you can't just play with gay abandon to say, like, this is what we're going to do and we're going to control the game, because Liverpool won't allow that. But by the same token, like, I thought we were very lucky to get it back to 1-0. I made up the defender shit himself, because, as you said, it just plays for the next 3, 4, 5 games where you go, well, remember that time it happened, and then Klopp can talk it up in press conferences and things like that. But by the same token, I think most people I knew, their heads had gone at 1-0 and didn't think we were ever going to get back into it. And it was a bit of a knot and ball, really. If the defender's playing well, or even just...
Yeah, would you say that was more based on what's happened the last few weeks, though, rather than anything that happened in the game?
No, not really.
Not to get back into it.
Yeah, but by the same token, what happened in the last few weeks was happening, I thought. We didn't look like we were going to break through their lines. I didn't necessarily think. We had a little bit of possession, but the goal comes from effectively a punt. You wouldn't even say it was a long pass. It was a bit of a punt into a space, which, listen, that's fine. If you do whatever it needs to be effective. But I think... I thought Liverpool were terrible yesterday. I didn't think we had it in us. And I think it comes on the back of the results that we've already had. And it looked like we were tired and they were refreshed. And you can't blame our lads for being tired. People like Gini Wijnaldum, who played every game for however long it is now, we just don't look like we've got the legs to compete. And then once they go 1-0 up, they've got the quality to make you have to run your legs off to get back into the game. We got back into it with a bit of luck, but I didn't think we were ever really in the game, to be honest.
It wasn't really that I thought Liverpool were terrible yesterday, but I think the reason that I thought we were never quite going to get a result from it was that in the first half, although perhaps on balance Liverpool had more chances, and we're on the front foot for the last sort of 10-15 minutes in an attacking sense. I think it was as intelligent as Guardiola's ever been at Anfield. And I think the lack of crowd helps them an awful lot, because they played within themselves in the first half. And I don't mean that in a disparaging way. I mean it as a compliment. In that you got the sense that Liverpool were playing at the absolute peak that they possibly could in that game. And it was still, I'd describe it as a reasonable performance from Liverpool, and no more than that. Whereas you just got the sense that City knew that we were tired from the start anyway, and would continue to tire physically and mentally as the game went on, and that they knew they would win the game in the second half. They obviously couldn't legislate for the errors that the goalkeeper makes, but I felt like their game plan and the way of managing the 90 minutes in different portions from them was really very good, and Liverpool weren't able to have any kind of plan like that, because he didn't have to change his off the bench in order to be able to make something happen if something went wrong. And also just didn't have the fitness in a physical or a mental sense to be able to sort of chop the game up into different segments and go, well, this is how we get through the first half hour and then the next fifth, and yada, yada, yada. I think that City were able to do that in a way that we weren't, and that just felt like a gulf between them in the end, not necessarily pure quality all over the pitch from start to finish, but that they had something within themselves that they would always keep them back, whereas Liverpool, despite the fact that he did score, spent the vast majority of the game looking like he wouldn't again.
The idea of managing through the game, John, as made there by Dan, I think it is a very valid point, thinking about Liverpool over the course of the match. And I think that the tiredness, the players playing out of position, will come onto the centre-backs in general. But Klopp's subs in the second half are interesting. I mean, whether they're right or wrong is in a strange sense almost beside the point. I was surprised by at least one of them, if not both of them. And I can't work out if it was going for it or Gusto or both. And Thiago's absolute dickhead yellow doesn't help matters either, that he's running around with that on that after the first half. But the idea that Liverpool can pitch themselves through a game, manage themselves through a game at the minute, with everything that's sort of gone on across the course of the whole season, is a valid point and a valid question from Dan.
Yeah, the subs... I've got a bit of a funny relationship with subs generally. Like, I'm always really surprised how much other people are obsessed with making them. And I think it's something I've noticed more that I've sort of not been in grounds really, because, you know, we do the hot mic commentary and there's loads of people on the chat and stuff and it's all great. But I find like by 20 minutes, there's 20 minutes in and people have had to save for subs and stuff like that. And always at half time, you know, it's never like, oh, we need to, the manager needs to tell them to do this or that. We need to get this person on. And I always think like, you're just as likely, I feel like if I've learned one thing from watching football for all my life, effectively, is that you're just as likely to look worse after subs than you are sort of better. But everyone sort of puts that out of their mind, really, and just goes, oh, if we get this fella on, he'll be boss and we'll be better than this, blah, blah, blah. And as I say, as often as not, it doesn't happen. And look, I understand the legs thing and freshness and that sort of is important, but it's often like he's not playing well, so get him off and put this fella on or whatever, or we need to be doing this and this person will be offering that. And I think we've seen this team enough work it out for themselves that, you know, I'm always sort of, you know, it's a bit surprised. But my favourite game of the season was Spurs at home. We didn't make any. We won it last minute. Do you know what I mean? And so I think, you know, I think it is a bit of a funny one, but I think for Jürgen, it's hard for me to analyse the subs because the I can't remember how soon they came before the goal, but it seems to be
3 or 4 minutes or so.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be any time at all, and obviously the second and then the third, and so it is sort of strange. But I would say it didn't seem to me to be a game that was crying out for Shaqiri. It didn't really feel to me, and if so, I'd expect them to do him say for a Mane or whatever, or Firmino and swap one of them in rather than. Than sort of what he did. And so I was a bit surprised, really. I also thought it was harsh on Kurt getting hooked, and I thought he'd been our best midfielder, and you know, he has, you know, a good effort that just goes past the post in the second half, but I thought his defensive work was really good, and I felt sorry for him, really, because I thought he's doing all the stuff that you've obviously asked him to do here and obviously worked on, because his natural game is, you know, he's like a lad in the street, Curtis, really, isn't he? And he was when he broke up, you know, he scales and he wants to make things happen, and you know, he's like a baller, isn't he? And we've turned him, you know, successfully, I would say, into this mature footballer who can play in these games. And then so when he does it, to sort of take him off at that point, I thought it was a bit harsh, really. And it was a little bit of, it's easy to take the kid off, I thought. And look, that's me trying to get into Jürgen's head, so maybe that's unfair, you know. And he might say, well, you know, I'm showing faith in the lads who've got us this far and have got more experience, and that's another way of looking at it, I suppose, isn't it? Is saying, well, you know, they've got a bigger track record in this games. But it did feel, as I say, the Jones one, and Milner for Thiago was sort of got, because Thiago did look like his legs were going a little bit, and I think and there was obviously the yellow you mentioned as well, but I think to do Shaqiri at Jones for that stage just sort of seemed a little bit odd for me. But as I say, it's hard to massively analyse because of what the keeper does next.
Well, I think the individual subs aren't necessarily the profound thing, but that I don't think, like, I wouldn't have took Jones off. I think it was strange, and I think the manager's made quite a few strange decisions over the last couple of months. But the thing to me that's more concerning about the subs is not who comes on when in what matches, but that Liverpool almost never ever look better when they make a sub, and haven't for months. He did when Curtis Jones came on at West Ham, and that's the only one that I can really think of. And that to me is partly to do with the manager, but the main thing is that the 10 lads that are left on the pitch when someone else gets swapped off and swapped on don't seem like they have any more belief that things are going to get better when it happens. You know, John mentioned there that sometimes subs can make you worse. He shouldn't make you worse all the time. You know, Salah and Firmino came on against Burnley and Liverpool were worse than when I think Origi was one of the ones that came off. They were worse when the better players came on, because no one looks like they're accepting that this is an effort to revitalise the team and get better, or this is going to refresh us and now we can do this. It just seems like the lads that are on the pitch perceive it as part of a process of losing the game rather than of trying to be better. And that's a mad psychological thing that they need to shake and quickly, because at the minute, if a game isn't going Liverpool's way, they almost always look worse when they try and make it better. And it can't be that way. You can't just continue like that for months, because then you'll just fall lower and lower and lower mentally.
Just on all of this, I mean, firstly, the psychology now of what the job is, that it's not trying to win the league now, maybe yeah. No bad thing, that's gone now and they can't even kid themselves. They shouldn't have been kidding themselves after Brighton. You can make an argument that they possibly shouldn't have been kidding themselves after Burnley, but they certainly shouldn't have been kidding themselves after Brighton. But now that's gone, they now know what the job is, and they now know that it is not the idea that you've got to win absolutely every game. We currently sit in fourth, and there is a certain points level that you can go at and go from there, and I think that might refresh them. But I think staleness in every sense, because what concerns me with the subs is the sheer lack of Oxlade-Chamberlain. And I'm not surprised. That's not me having a go. You know, I felt that Oxlade-Chamberlain came on against Brighton and looked dreadful. And he just looks so far off physically, to be quite honest with you. Like, he just doesn't look like the sharpness is there or anything like that. And we're not just missing them. My point is, I think more, we're not just missing the centre-halves as centre-halves. And we're not just missing them because of Henderson and Fabinho having to play back there. We're sort of missing the idea of a general framework. So you can spend five games getting Oxlade-Chamberlain back to fitness if you have got Henderson and Fabinho in midfield. Mm. And now you've got a fully fit Oxlade-Chamberlain, and he's an option for you that you can decide to use or not use, and you can use him during games, and everyone's got confidence in him. What worries me at the minute is that they do look like a gang of footballers who are lacking a bit of confidence in themselves, but they're also just lacking a bit of confidence in these other pricks that they're playing with. And that's what concerns me as much as anything else. Now, in the grand scheme of things, they do just all look a bit like, with the exception of Henderson and towards Henderson, they do just look a bit like, is this knobhead again? What's he going to do? Fucking hell. Rather than gambling and backing each other at times.
No, I think that's exactly right. And I think it's the root of all of the psychological stuff, because everything that we're thinking when we watch a Liverpool game, whether it's watching against Brighton and going, oh, these aren't going to fucking score again, are you? Or watching a sub come on and think, I'm not sure this is going to help us. It's bad that we're thinking that just for ourselves, but the players are thinking it as well. And that's the issue, is you can sort of sense that their emotions are very similar to ours in the context of it. I think on the subs, I totally agree with you. I think we're missing the idea of players. And that sounds like wishy-washy shite, the way that I've phrased it. But I know what I mean, and I'm going to try and get it across better. So the idea that Oxlade-Chamberlain can come on and be direct and run at people, and maybe make someone commit to a tackle on the edge of the area and that kind of thing, that's gone. None of us think that when he's coming on. None of us think that Divock Origi is capable of scoring a mad goal at the end of a game anymore. And if we think and pretty much know that these players aren't capable of the ideas that you would ask of them, then the lads that are already on the pitch know it as well. And I think that's what's doing for the end of games for Liverpool lately, where you're watching maybe the final of 20-30 and it just feels like a write-off. And it's because it doesn't feel like the sort of the mental role that some of the players have played, you know, the ones that aren't full-on first-teamers over the past few years, they just aren't capable of doing it anymore, whether it's for reasons of the shape and the system, whether it's due to the psychology, whether it's due to form and fitness, whatever it is. And if you lose that belief in some of the people around you, whether it's, you know, if you're playing centre mid for Liverpool and you've not got belief in two of the lads around you, well, then you may as well not have belief in all of the 11. Because if you can't back such and such to your right-hand side who's playing the eight next to you, then it's gone. Pretty much the whole system then falls down on top of it, because what Liverpool have been built on so much over the past few years is backing each other. I remember being really pissed off in Kiev when Mo Salah went off, because the whole ground, our end, and the players lost their heads over it, even though the lesson of that Liverpool season to me was that it was about the system and all of the players dragging each other up. And Liverpool still could have won that final, but didn't on that basis, I don't think. And I think this mentality lately just reminds me of that in a totally different way. Obviously, it's not a final, it's over the course of a longer period of time in the league. But it feels like there's just quite a few people around them that come on that they don't back. And that then is spread to the whole thing. Because as I say, that Burnley one was really shocking to me, where Solano Firmino came on and they got no better. So it's gone from being, it is still the idea of the individuals that they don't trust, but that's happened so much, I think, that they now don't trust the process of changes as well. And that's then a really deep-rooted thing that I think just the odd long-term absentee, Keita, Jota, coming back, I don't think necessarily resolves. I think it's a much more slow process now of sort of mental healing. And that'll be dead, dead hard to watch, but it's what just has to happen.
I think as part of that, Kev, what is difficult is that you're watching at times and it feels like, and as I say, I think Liverpool do well in patches yesterday, but there's a lot of players who are just lacking a form of sharpness. And it's either because they've just come back or they've been overplayed in the interim period where they haven't been in. And again, Henderson is the exception. He is quite consistently the exception to this stuff at the minute. But there's times where the two fullbacks look themselves, they look normal, they look on it, and then they just dip. you suspect through the fact that they're absolutely fucking goosed because they've been legged everywhere for weeks. Then you've got a similar sort of thing going on at times in the middle of the park. You can make that argument. Mane's just come back from a bit of a knock. He might have been rushed back for this one, to be honest with you. Looks like he lacked a bit of sharpness. And then on the other side, you feel as though, well, I think, you know, obviously Salah scores the pen and looks lively. You do wonder if he is just being run a little bit too much. And you can sort of go on. I'm not, you know, looking at the two seasons before this one, you felt everyone was just quite consistently in a good moment. And even when there was some adversity, they'd find a way to get themselves back in there. At the minute, as I say, you're able to basically put all of Liverpool's players into just come back and lacking sharpness because of that, haven't had enough pre-season or et cetera, all lacking sharpness because I've been running to the ground. And as I say, in the middle of both of these groups is Henderson, who looks fine. I must be wondering what all these pricks are worrying about.
Yeah, but Henderson, even by the same token, must just be going, fuck's sake, why am I having to play at centre-back? Put me in the midfield and I'll pull these along. I will pull them forward and I will pull them back and I will get them going. And I will have Thiago doing the passing he needs to do because I'll do his running for him. So even with Henderson, there's an issue there because it's playing where he, I don't think he looks like a centre-half. I think how good he's been at centre-half has been overplayed. How much we miss him in midfield hasn't been underplayed though because he's so vital to us. But what we're seeing is the end of one team, and hopefully it'll roll into another team. But that it needs to be the change of players as well. The change of the guard needs to happen. That's why I'm. To start of the season and the way he was playing, if you'd have asked me about the Wijnaldum, I'd have said it's a joke that the club haven't gone balls out for him to make the change. But it looks now, very much the last few weeks, looks like we've ran the legs off him anyway. But even if we hadn't, even if he was still playing to the world the level, we need a change in the squad. We need to freshen the squad up. And Jota looked like that change at the start of the season, to be fair, but then he got injured. So we've made some changes that are heading towards that, but I think we need a little bit more surgery than we do. And I don't think it's anything major, but the likes of Bobby Firmino has been a fantastic saving for Liverpool. But now we need to start really realistically thinking, is he going to be the same Bobby Firmino we ever was before? And I think we can all say probably not. So that's fine, that happens. He's a Liverpool legend for what he's done for us. We need to be thinking now, okay, how do we freshen this squad up? And players like Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, he's 28 this year. He's been very, very, very unlucky with injuries. If you get the 17-18 Oxlade-Chamberlain, no one's talking about getting rid of him. But as it is now, no one's got any confidence that he'll ever come back. And the reason for that is he needs 10 games or probably even more for a run to become the top player that he can be. He'll never get that at Liverpool because he'll never have the time. And whether his body can hold up to it, I don't know. Then you've got others like Naby Keita, fantastic footballer when he's on it, not fit enough, never there enough, cannot be relied upon. So there's lots of options to get rid of people, but then we go back to the financial thing because no one's paying us 50 million for Naby Keita. No one. No one's going to pay us probably even 20 million for Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. And I don't think even with Michael Edwards' voodoo that he does on other clubs. So we need to start being realistic.
And COVID, Kev. Well, no one's got any fucking money.
No, we get 100%. That's what I mean. So, but Liverpool are in the same situation. So I know I banged on about the owners before, but it's time to piss or get off the pot because this summer we need to shake things up. Jürgen Klopp has got he does well with a small squad. That's perfectly fine. But you've got to cycle through the players. You can't just run the same squad for 4 or 5 years and expect them not to have the legs fall off some of the players. It's going to happen to them. So Liverpool, listen, the signs we made in the summer were good. Thiago, great, but then gets injured. So we've been unlucky there. Jota starts brilliantly, gets injured. So it's a bit of a nightmare. Tsimikas, it's one of them. And he's a replacement left back. But who cares whether he's any good or not, really, as long as Andy Robertson doesn't get injured. So I don't feel like we're going to go through this. I don't think this squad is going to be able to go through a rebirth and become another title winning squad, is what I'm saying. I think it needs to be semi broken up and additions made in the right areas.
I think that process had started, Kev. I'll come back to you on that and then we'll talk literally about the centre-halves. I think that process had started. I think it's difficult. So for instance, one of the issues you've got there is you're saying your point on Oxlade-Chamberlain and Keita is theoretically all right, if not for COVID, but also the general average age issue is Oxlade-Chamberlain and Keita are two of the younger midfielders. So I think Liverpool are all in on both of them to try to get them right. And it might be that you've got to sort of now get into next season. It's interesting they've took the time. I thought they missed Keita massively yesterday, to be honest with you. I think he'd have made a massive difference. And it's interesting they've took the time on him this time because I think they know, firstly, if they go back to the market now and try to shift him, like you say, well, they're not going to get the money that they would have got. So they've got to almost find a way to make it work. But I think if you look at that, you know, you've got Jota, you've got Thiago, the idea of Elliot coming back from Blackburn, you're already doing a fair bit there. It is a couple more, and it's that sort of fine line, isn't it, between feeling as though you've got to make massive changes. And we're having these chats. We don't know how good Kabak is yet. We haven't had Van Dijk. We haven't had Gomez. Fabinho was actually one of Liverpool's younger senior midfielders, so him getting back in there might well help. Do you know what I mean? I don't think it's necessarily... I don't think it has to be stark. I just think that it's sort of started, but the point is that it hasn't been able to progress. If there weren't injuries this season, you'd be able to see what the actual roadmap is rather than just this constant firefighting.
Yeah, 100%. But the issue you've got is we have got the injuries and we are in danger of dropping out of the top four.
Yep.
So you've got to think the players that come in. So listen, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, I really like him. He's a really good footballer. But in my opinion, I don't think he'll ever be a fully fit and functional first team member of Liverpool, because he's coming to an age and he's had so many injuries that I just don't think he trusts his body anymore. We can't get him on the pitch. If we could, I'd be made up. I think he's a great player. Naby Keita, again, it's the same thing, great, but we've got to be careful that we're not just pushing on with these two fellas because we can't get the money for them, because that's just pissing good money after bad. That, because if you leave them two in there and they're not good enough and the bodies can't do it, what could happen is we go into a season where they're two of the main midfielders and both of them could miss 6 months apiece. That's not unreasonable to think. And if that happens, you don't have another season where you go, well, it's for injuries. We're having this season because we've got bad injuries at centre-half. You can't go into a season where you don't trust the main players in there. And listen, it sounds a bit doom and gloom. I'm not making that point, because if we've got our fully fit squad, and then we just make these are more tinkering around the outside of the edges of the squad I'm talking about, rather than breaking the team up. But like Shaqiri as well, listen, he's sound as long as he's your 20th man. He's become our 14th man, really, and he's okay when he comes in sometimes, but playing from the start and 9 times out of 10, he's absolutely terrible. So we need to be thinking, okay, are we keeping him because we can't afford to buy anybody else, or because someone won't pay us the money we want, or are we keeping him because he improves our squad? And I don't think it's the second one.
Well, I don't think it was the second one this season. And I think that if, for instance, they get an offer for him, they'd accept, we'd still have Elliot here. And Elliot might actually be more use. And next season, there's no way Elliot goes back out on loan. More of this, analysing this game, Liverpool going forward and looking ahead to Europe on the AnfieldRap.com /subscribe if you want to come and take part of it. Download the app and there's the tokens there to be used as well. Liverpool have got a bit of a breather for a few days now before a massive week. Leicester away, Leipzig away, in Budapest. It feels as though they're absolutely diddling us with that one, aren't they? And then honestly, it felt like the needliest place they could possibly have put that game. I know obviously if the circumstances were the circumstances, the game would be taking place in Leipzig, but all in, I just feel like someone's managed to find a way to deny me a trip to Budapest. Like, do you know what I mean?
They may as well have put it in Benidorm.
Yeah, I'd just go, I'd start walking on my ass.
It's absolute pure needle. So you could have had 4 days in Budapest, could you? Nah. No. It is ridiculous. But anyway, that will be in Budapest, and then a massive game, Merseyside Derby at Anfield, coming on the Saturday after the game in Budapest. All of that being previewed and looked back on by the Anfield Wrap. TheAnfieldWrap.com/subscribe and get your tokens. If you download the app to try what it is we're about. Part of what Kev's saying here, John, and part of what I think, it's almost a shame the next one is a big game away at Leicester. Liverpool have got to go there and get a result, to be quite honest with you, because the thing I wouldn't mind seeing is Fabinho and Henderson both reintroduced back into the heart of that midfield, and Davies and Kabak given 3 or 4 matches to establish themselves. It's hard to make that argument, even with the week's training that they're now going to get, to do that for Leicester, Leipzig and Everton, but there's part of me that wouldn't have a problem if Liverpool did. I think at the very least, they've got to get one of Henderson and Fabinho back into midfield. 2 would be absolute dream street.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, we don't know the level that they are, do we? You know, you obviously read the scout reports, and on the Anfield Wrap, we spoke to people who knew more about them, and you get sort of positive things from supporters and journalists and things. But yeah, you're going to be looking at them this week and thinking, how much can I get out of you? How quickly can I get you on the pitch? And what's my sort of solution here? You know, I mean, look, you'd be shocked if we start Leicester with Fabinho and Henderson at centre-half, because... You know, then you start to think, well, what's the point of the whole thing? Are you just bringing these lads in for more cover? You know, but then he will be conscious of Leicester. And I know Vardy came back for them at the weekend. He's obviously a brilliant player. He's you know, the way he drags defenders around and things like that. So Jürgen might be thinking, well, I'm a better with a midfielder back there, really. I think I'm starting to think more and more that we're not going to see a hell of a lot of Fabinho in midfield, if we're honest. I think he'll be looking at him as a centre-half and seeing if maybe him and Kabak.
It's a tough ask that after last night, though, John. I mean, I think, you know, I take Kev's point before that you've got to be careful not to overstate what Henderson's doing. But I feel as though I feel as though centre-half might have just burned Fabinho's head out a bit by now. You know, I quite liked him back there for a period. But at the minute, I think Henderson looks a better option back there, and I'd love to see Fabinho back in at six.
Well, maybe, yeah, maybe he'll stick with Henderson there, but what I'm saying is that it's probably one of them. And I think, you know, he might go a bit horses for courses, and he might swap them over depending on the opposition, and also, you know, keeping it fresh for them and going, all right, you can have a go in midfield this week, but you're probably back there sort of the week after. You might do a little bit of that. I don't know, but I think I'd be surprised if it is the two of them, just because it wouldn't be a very sort of Jürgen thing to do to suddenly have this brand new sort of centre-half partnership, I think. So I think he'll have the eye on the games. I think he'll be thinking about what's coming up in terms of, you know, how big they are, how sort of tough it is, really. Look, ideal situation is the two of them are flying and training this week. They're looking really good. They're looking confident. And he goes, yeah, I'm feeling good about them. Get them in. And then you're picking Fabinho and Henderson in midfield with one other, you know, for Leicester. Wouldn't that be brilliant? But I think more likely is that he thinks, oh, I'll go with one. Well, Kabak's got the more sort of top level experience. And he's one who, you know, who've been looking after a bit longer. So I'll go in with the midfielder. I think that feels sort of more likely to me, really. But even that's a step forward, isn't it, in terms of where we've been and what we've been doing. I think
Fabinho was a nightmare, Dan, really, across the course of the 90 minutes. Not obviously the same as the keeper, but it is marked to me that he's just what would worry me about Leicester, but also in general, is he just has a bit of a run at me thing dangling over his head at centre half at the moment, and he's struggling with it a tiny little bit. I think, you know, that's not to say that, you know, I think he was playing excellently at the heart of that defence, so it is worth pointing that out. It is, though, you know, it is difficult for the manager now. He's got the week to work with them, and the boost of the idea of seeing a team sheet and knowing that Fabinho and Henderson will be back into midfield would be massive.
It would be, but the point that you've just made there about him having a week to work with them still pisses me off, because he should have had 6 weeks to work with them at this stage. You know, everyone was really quick on deadline day to you know, reordain Michael Edwards as king of everything. And I'm not sure whose decision it was to wait until deadline day, but whoever it was negligent. Because the you know, we all knew the situation, and Liverpool knew the situation in October, November, and certainly on January the 1st. And it wasn't any different by the end of January. Joel Matip was always going to miss loads of footy. So having it confirmed isn't really actually any different. Liverpool knew that and didn't act upon it until it was really late. So that cost Liverpool in January. But it also cost Liverpool yesterday. And if they're not both ready to go on Sunday, as defined by the manager, which is fine because he's only had a week to work with them, then it is continuing to cost Liverpool again. The deal as well, like if we were asking them to spend 20, 30 million on centre-half and then they came up with one in deadline day, then sounds. But the two players that they've ended up with, the deal was always there to be done under the circumstances, especially Ben Davies. He was always gone on a free transfer in the summer. Preston would have always taken the money. He always would have chosen Liverpool over a Bosman to Celtic. So the players that Liverpool have ended up with, and I think the same with Kabak as well, Schalke are desperate for the money and they're going to get relegated, and it's always been the case. It's so frustrating that, you know, one of those two could have played yesterday, and Christ knows how it turns out. I think the manager was absolutely right not to play either of them, because if one of them plays and Liverpool get fucked like he did, then it might just do for them for a few weeks mentally. They might end up in a similar state that the rest of the Liverpool players are. And then as much as you've got new bodies, you feel like you're back to square one from a psychological point of view. So I might have played Phillips, for example, but I think he was right not to play either of the two new lads, because I think it was maybe 90% likely that it was always going to go badly. And then you put yourself in a worse position in the longer run. But it's so frustrating that we're going into this Leicester game and I'm thinking, yeah, it would be nice to play one of them, but I really see an argument not to. and I shouldn't see an argument for Liverpool to not play centre-halves against Leicester City because it's crackers. But because of the way that they've handled the situation, it seems semi-logical. And, you know, the injury crisis is the genesis of all of Liverpool's problems, and Liverpool couldn't do anything about that. But Liverpool have handled it and managed it about as badly as I think you could. And it's why it's still hurting them in individual games now, and it's why it's still hurting them when they've got new players now as well. I think the manager hasn't been great over the past few months, but he looks exhausted just like the other players, and I think he's perfectly entitled to because his work is exhausting and the world going on around him at the minute is exhausting. But I think he's not had a great few months. And off the pitch as well, as I say, as much as people were made up with them coming in on deadline day, I think it was just an indictment of how badly they'd done before that. And that then is a significant reason why Henderson and Fabinho are having to do what they're doing, or why Thiago looks hopelessly exposed playing as an eighth in front of Trent Alexander-Arnold, because Liverpool have just managed the situation really, really badly. I would hope that they look at one of them, probably more likely Kabak, but I'm not sure, and think, well, he's good enough to, or he's in, you know, a state of fitness that's good enough to be able to play at the weekend. But I wouldn't be surprised if he weren't, and I'll be really, really irritated if they're not, because as tough a hand as Liverpool have been dealt, it was entirely avoidable with the players that they've brought in. They could have done it so much earlier and been in loads better for the game yesterday, but also for the few that are going to follow now.
Who would be your priority to get back into centre mid, Kev? Out of Fabinho and Henderson, which one would be the one I want to see back in is ASAP?
Both. I'd play both centre-halves. I said I'd play both centre-halves for City. If you look at the rest of the game on its own, if you don't win that midfield battle, you're not going to win the game. So if you put that midfield of Thiago, Milner, Wijnaldum in there, for instance, I don't think that'll win the battle. And I think so. I think we'll probably lose the game. If we've upset the balance of our whole team because of the lack of centre halves, why don't we then just say, okay, well, we put these two centre halves here. Listen, you're not bringing two kids from nowhere. You're bringing Kabak, who's we've had our eye on for ages. Obviously, he's been in a terrible Schalke team, and you're bringing Ben Davies, who's playing for Preston. It's not a great level. It's probably not who we would have picked, but they're still centre halves, and they've still been playing at centre half all season. Throw them in there and protect them with Fabinho and Henderson, and say to Thiago, okay, listen, these two will do your running for you, or say to Wijnaldum, you play, let Thiago have a break, whatever. But go with if you've got to deplete a back four, go with a strong front six. So your midfield is not going to get out-battled by anybody. Don't give that Wilfred Ndidi a chance to get into the game. Put Henderson right on him and just say, you think you can run the legs off me? Fucking have a go at it, son. See how you get on. And if you get past me, here's go-go gadget legs for Fabinho coming behind you, and he's going to absolutely take you apart. So before you know it, you've got Leicester worrying about our midfield rather than where I am at the moment, thinking, fucking hell, if we play that same midfield, we could be in serious danger. We're not helping ourselves by playing this.
Take Van Dijk out of it, Kev. So your argument is, let's take Van Dijk out because he's not fair for what I'm about to do. If you rate Gomez and Matip as 10 out of 10, you'd say at the minute Fabinho and Henderson are 6 or 7.
Yeah.
And then what you do is you say, well, if that's the reality, and let's even say Kabak and Davis are 5 and 6, I'm just plucking the numbers, but you just put them in because you make your midfield 10 out of 10. So your attitude is, we're disrupted at centre-half anyway, so we may as well go as strong as humanly possible at midfield because the difference isn't there. You can't say Van Dijk, because if Van Dijk's 10 out of 10, you know, John Stones is 2. If you take Matip and that's not me slagging off John Stones, by the way, because if I'm making Gomez 10, I'm happy to have John Stones be 9. But if you take Gomez and Matip up here and you say that they're 10 out of 10, if we could have them, that'd be a 10 out of 10 centre-half partnership. Let's have the 5 or 6 out of 10 centre-half partnership, maybe the 6 or 7 out of 10 centre-half partnership, and let's just win every fucking midfield battle.
Exactly. And also, even if Davies and Kabak are 4 out of 10, which I don't think they are, but having Fabinho and Henderson in front of them makes them 5 out of 10 maybe, or maybe even a 6 out of 10 because they're protected, which also, having Henderson at midfield, you cannot understate how important he is to Trent. Poor Trent got absolutely roasted yesterday, and he was terrible going backwards. But at times he's got two men, one of them being Raheem Sterling, who was on absolute fire, just targeting him on his own. He didn't have another Liverpool player within 25 yards of him. Whereas under normal circumstances with Henderson in the midfield, he'd have been right over there helping him out.
So, and he liberates him to go 15, 20 yards further forward as well.
Exactly. So at the moment, Trent can't do anything really because he hasn't got Henderson there. Liverpool's midfield is vital for the end of this season, and this Leicester game is a vital game as well, because Leicester have got a rick in them as well. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying they're not great shakes in the grand scheme of things, but at the moment neither are Liverpool. So we need to be as strong as we can in the areas we can be, and I think our midfield three of Henderson, Fabinho and Ayew there outdoors their midfield, and their midfield is their best part of their team by a country mile. If their midfield gets hold of the game, it can then make our back four look jittery, because they can control the pitch, whereas if we've got them two players in the middle, they won't control the pitch. So what they'll be trying to do is feed balls through, and centre-halves can deal with that. Put a bit of confidence in Kabak and Davies, or even, listen, play Nat Phillips if you want, but play two centre-halves there and get the two best midfielders that we've got at the club into the midfield in a game where the midfield is absolutely vital. So for me, play them, let them have a go at it. And as I think Dan said it before, let them have four or five games in a row. Listen, we're in shit seat at the moment anyway, aren't we? So go for it, let them have a little go and see if we can win the battles further up the pitch. A front six of Fabinho, Henderson, Thiago, Mane, Salah, Firmino, that strikes fear into Leicester. Whereas if you put them two midfielders in the back, Leicester have got something to go at.
That was the point I was going to make about Phillips there. I thought it was really interesting that he's on the bench yesterday and Davis wasn't. And as much as I know that Nat Phillips is dead set slow and he's not that good at passing the footy, but he hasn't let Liverpool down so far. You know, there was that game at Brighton where he didn't look great, but he's playing next to Nico Williams and Liverpool was just a bit of a shit show all around that day, I think. I think he deserves, you know, mentioning alongside the two new ones, because in terms of his career so far as well, a level that he's played that is not that different. He's played at the top of the second Bundesliga.
Yeah.
Kabak was at the very bottom of the top one, getting fucking twatted every week. and Ben Davies has played the Preston. And, you know, I think there's in the grand scheme of things, the other two will end up being better players. But right now, in terms of the level of experience before, there's not loads of difference. I know that Kabak's been an international four or five times as well.
Well, I mean, hypothetically, Dan, we go at the end of February, we go to Bramall Lane. And I wouldn't have a problem if Nat Phillips starts
exactly,
a Bramall Lane.
Exactly. I think Nat Phillips, John mentioned courses there. I think Nat Phillips is the most courses Liverpool footballer I've ever seen in my entire life. And will be throughout the course of the rest of the season.
The course is entry 4 miles, 4 furlongs, but it's fucking poured down.
Heavy ground.
it's a steeplechase. But this one specifically, I'm all right with the idea of one of the centre mid playing centre half. Over just maybe the next sort of fortnight or so, and then we need to be in a position where they're not doing it ever again, hopefully. But I'm all right with the idea of betting in, but I'm still pissed off at it because it should have been done earlier. But for this one, I think we need to do something on the right, because Harvey Barnes is absolutely brilliant.
He is boss.
I think he's incredible. And he'll play off that left. And I think if Thiago is stood there in front of Trent, I think it's going to be really bad. I think they need to find a way, Thiago, not to be playing as an eight in front of Trent Alexander-Arnold. And at the minute, I think that means just not playing. So if one of them moves forward, say Fabinho, my preference would be to get Fabinho out of defence, because I think he's looking ropey there lately. I think his head is burnt out, as you were saying before. And I think that we miss them both equally. So I'd just move him, because he's a bit more of a liability at the back. If you can move him forward and then maybe play, tell Ronaldo he's just fucking playing again, and Curtis Jones or Milner and Jones or something like that, then I would try and do that, because I think getting Thiago out of the midfield just in the short term for this game where we're going to be run at down the sides will help Liverpool an awful lot defensively, and I think we need that on the sides as much as the centre backs are an issue.
Other thing, John, last little thing before we finish off, is Jota is back in a form of training as well. It'll be important to get back around, I think. And again, the one thing Liverpool don't want to do is rush. I think with any of them now who are coming back, I think rushing is the wrong thing to do. But all of that said, I think Liverpool being able to, for instance, go 4-2-3-1 and pick all four of them will be no bad thing as we get closer and closer to the running. You might not want to do that for Leicester, Leipzig away or Everton at home, but after them, the fixtures do ease a little bit, and Liverpool, the idea of just being able to blast teams with attacking quality might be no bad thing.
Yeah, I don't want us to put like unfair expectations on Jota. I feel like, you know, he had a good start to his Liverpool career, and I think, you know, he looked great. But I think, you know, maybe absence has turned him into, I don't know, this you know, Lionel Messi or something. Whereas actually, you know, he was a lad at Wolves, he was doing okay, and we've you know, took a chance on, and it looked like it was working. And so I think, you know, we can't just sort of build him up too much. He's going to have a tough month or so at some point. You know, in fact, arguably just before he got injured, you know, he was having he had a couple of quiet games. And so I think, you know, we need to, as I say, be realistic and not do sort of what we did a little bit with Thiago. I think, well, Thiago was here, you know what I mean? Everything's going to be brilliant. So then it feels like people have got a cob on with Thiago now because he's not like a one-man midfield. And so with Jota, I think, you know, we've got to be realistic, but also he will make a difference because he's another attacking talent and, you know, someone who's able to give the lads a bit more of a rest, and rightly or wrongly, you know, Jürgen hasn't felt like he's got that with what he's had. In fact, one of the lads has gone out on loan to get him some games time, and so Jota will be someone who will allow us to rotate and keep that quality level high, and did seem to have a really good understanding with it, with who was around him, and has obviously got an eye for goal as well. So yeah, it'd be great to get him back. It'd be great to have him as an option, definitely. And you know, there are still a lot of good players who play for Liverpool, and we need to remember that. And if we can get more back, then brilliant. And you know, it's a week now where we can hopefully, you know, regroup, have a little look at the centre half options, have a little look at sort of what we've got, and have a think about, you know, what we think we can still do this season, because there's loads to play for. There's the Champions League there, which we've got a nice enough tie in that we're able to go deep. We're not able to go to Budapest, but you know, we are able to kind of, you know, think, well, that's an opportunity to get through to the quarters then and sort of see what happens. And if we're in a better shape squad-wise by the quarters, you know, as I say, like Kabak's looking pretty good or whatever, maybe Ben Davis as well, you know, Jota's back, the midfield, you know, back stronger because of all those things, then, you know, there's no reason why we can't do Real Madrid and be a bit shit in the league but win the European Cup. Do you still do that fucking every year? The pricks.
Excellent stuff. Great chat there from John. I liked it. Let him give that team talk, the pricks. in the Liverpool dressing room. Hope you've enjoyed it.
Sevilla seventh again and they won the UEFA Cup.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they just own that now. They get to win it whenever they want. Just press a button. Thank you very much indeed to John Gibbons, to Kev Walsh and to Dan Austin. It's been obviously a difficult Anfield up to get through for a variety of reasons, some technical issues as well. Hopefully you found it useful. All the subscription stuff you need. We did an AFQ as well after the match last night in order to allow people to work through some issues. That wasn't the plan, but it worked in the end. You can get that as well if you download the Anfield Wrap app and use the tokens. Thank you very much indeed to Dan, to Kev, to John. It is the Anfield Wrap. Liverpool are not going to win the league, but that was after the game against Brighton. The job now is just finish top four, go as far as you can in Europe. Enjoy that bit of it. And then let's all regroup and let's sort next season out. See you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.